Welcome to this episode of the iCoach Cricket podcast. Since retiring from playing in 2011, Ants Botha has developed a reputation as one of the best coaches around. He's played first-class cricket here for Derbyshire and Warwickshire and over in South Africa. He's now looking after Nottinghamshire's batters and spin bowlers, working alongside Peter Moores. Tim Deller has dropped into Trent Bridge to find out how pre-season is going.
Winter's always a great time just for player development, but I won't lie, I'm ready for some sunshine.
Can it drag a bit? Because I mean, there's only so much you can do. We're just next door to the indoor school here, and you can do as much as anyone can do in an indoor school, but it's not quite the same, is it?
It's not, but I mean, as long as you have clear structures and plans and you've helped the players understand what they need to work on and how they can separate their own practice, it's a real great opportunity to make big roads in their own development. So I always love the winters, but always, as you say, you also are then always ready to give it a nudge and get outdoors. So
yeah. This time of year, you're itching to get outside. I know you're heading off to sunnier climes for a little while, and that must be great. And then you get different people coming in and out, going away to play abroad and coming back and doing some training. So it's not too much of a treadmill.
Not at all. I mean, we split our winters up into sort of three, four week blocks at a time. And when you actually break it down, it's actually not that many sessions that the guys have actually got opportunity to improve their game away from the pressure of the game and the performance of the game. So I think that's the sell to the players, is, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity, first phase back in November before Christmas, to explore your game, have a bit of fun with it, try and stretch things in different areas, and then, you know, after Christmas, try and refine it. And then there's a nice performance phase that we're moving into now, where you start to gear up and say, okay, now can we put it under pressure? So it's quite a nice way that we've found has worked to help players just improve.
I just arrived and some of the men's team had just finished a session. They look quite pooped, actually. I think you worked them hard this morning, because they were saying, should we go for stairs or lift this morning on the way up to the canteen here? And they've gone for the lift option. So you've obviously worked them hard this morning.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a really good S&C team behind us. And, you know, one of the big pushes over the last few years is just trying to stretch ourselves from a physical point of view. And we feel that we're breaking the back of that with regards to our squad. So that's exciting. Yeah, and it's the balance between stretching them physically and then obviously when it's time to do work on their skills, they work on their skills as well, yeah.
And how are you? Because as a batting coach predominantly, I know you dabble in other areas as well, it's quite hard work physically, isn't it? Do you ever look over at the bowling net and think, God, what am I doing coaching batting? Because you're sidearming, you're throwing, you're on your feet for hours and hours, whereas some other areas of the game coaching, I think, is a bit more, well, it's less physically demanding, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I always have a joke with Shiny and say, listen, you know, bowling coaching is my language.
Kevin Shiney, the fittest man in the world, probably doesn't take kindly to that.
No. But I do, I look after the spinners as well. I like the contrast. I love the contrast between developing the spinners, but my main roles is batting and then obviously spin. You have to be prepared to put a stint in physically, because it's not getting easier, you know. The physical demands on batting coaching now is right up there, you know. And if you can't deal with that, then you're in the wrong profession. Especially with the modern day player now, they expect a lot of balls to be flicked at them, thrown at them. So I often say to a lot of young coaches who are wanting to go into batting coaching is that one of the best things you can do is really develop your skill from that point of view, because it's a really lovely tool to have in your toolbox to be able to stretch batters, and it's vital now.
So wanging the ball down at 80 miles an hour with a sidearm is your bread and butter, isn't it, really? That's what you have to do day after day. Do you use sidearm a lot, or do you go for throwing? Or and what about bowling machines as well, actually? Because they're still, I think they've come slightly back into fashion in the last year or so.
Yeah, again, you know, we've sort of gone, I think over the coaching journey over the last 5-6 years, it has gone it's gone through some different phases, hasn't it? You know, the reality is you can't always have bowlers bowling at you, and the reality is sometimes, you know, you want to be able to mix that up. And I think the balance now between, you know, quality side arming where you can stretch players, where you can still groove, there's a natural element of, you know, it's not exactly like a ball machine. There's still going to be a natural variation, but then also Ball machines are great just for absolutely grooving quality positions. Yeah. Great
and
basics,
just volume
strong positions
as well. I mean, volume in turn. Yeah. You get an hour, you face a lot of balls on a bowling machine. That, probably double the number even with sidearming.
That's
you?
Exactly right. So I think over time now we've got a really nice balance between the absolute groovings of quality positions, grooving certain shots, front to back hip, just different pockets, and then you know you're stretching it with the sidearm, and I think that's a nice balance. So, and also the Merlin's a great machine for good spin.
And so your shoulder's all right. Yeah, I mean, how many deliveries do you chuck down in a week? Have you ever counted?
I would not want to know. No, it's a hell of a lot. You know, look, make no mistake, it's a hell of a lot. But look, I enjoy that side of things. But you know, I often also say it is one of those. I'm probably going to be a far better coach than I am now 20 years down the line, and physically I won't be able to most probably do what I do now. It's just one of those things, and I guess...
How old are you now?
I'm 48 now.
Oh, you got years on you. Well, you got 1 year on me. Start.
Yeah, so, yeah, and it's always that balance, but I think when you've got a nice group of coaches and you can offset the load and you can still create a culture within your side or your team or your organisation where they can actually help each other at times, it just softens the load a little bit.
The other thing with batting coaching, even since you were playing, which wasn't really that long ago at all, guys hit it so hard now, don't they? And I mean, it comes back at you. And I know you can, if you're like me, you just go back of a length, so they can't do that. And you know, everything goes square or behind square. But they do, at times, whack it back at you. Do you wear a helmet? You've got a mitt on, presumably? You have to be on your toes, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I only really use a mitt for white ball cricket because it's a slightly different type of coaching a lot of the time. They line and you know, you're doing a nice lineup to them a lot of the time where they're just grooving a nice quality strike of the ball. So a lot of the time then you are in danger and you've got to just be aware. I don't like where I should wear a helmet if I'm honest, but I just feel claustrophobic. Yeah. And when you're doing it for 3 hours on a trot, I just struggle to actually just, I guess, rapport with a player.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, so because it is a barrier, isn't it? It's a bit like Formula One. One of the issues with Formula One is you can't really see the facial expressions of the drivers. Yeah. And it's the same with a coach. You're constantly communicating through your facial expression and generally your body language. And that would change it, wouldn't it, actually? If you're wearing a helmet, you can't have that same rapport.
Yeah, and I mean, that's most probably also just habit, if I'm honest, because let's be honest, a lot of your white ball coaching, certainly in season, is waiting for the right moments to be able to nudge and push and actually coach. The rest of the time, it's giving, you know.
I was going to ask you about that.
You're serving players, you know.
But because it is a step change, isn't it? I mean, we're not far away from the start of the season now. Do you throw less balls and actually do less hours of batting coaching once the season's up and running? Or is it just a different sort of coaching, I suppose, on a match day, for instance?
Yeah, look, the amount of balls are still exactly the same. You know? Yeah, definitely. For a few reasons. I mean, we've installed within our group now over a 7-year period just I feel good habits with regards to the county season as a long haul. You don't often have quality coaching sessions available because you're playing so often. So a lot of your compounding of the coaching and the disciplines that the guys need to keep practicing and improving happens in the morning before a 4-day game. Every morning they'll have their 10, 12-minute slots. Over the course of the season, you get a lot of work done. So, you know, you're there for every morning for 2 hours, and maybe if you're batting, there's still your number 7, 8, and 9s, you can obviously go back to the back of the nets and get some work done. So there are opportunities, but it's a different type of coaching because you know that particular player's in season, in competition. So a lot of it is massaging egos at the right times, managing, making sure that they're really feeling wonderful about themselves, giving them a nudge at the right times.
So you're away from the technical stuff and more the mental stuff, a bit of tactical stuff.
Yes, I like to work that holistically a lot of the time because they work hand in hand, and I think the more the player's aware and his awareness of his body and that, he can handle technical as such talk, you know. Whereas if you only have that and you can't link it with the method of the game and how you can handle the pressure, then it can get stuck. Mm-hmm. So the balance between all of those three, I think, effectively is what the game demands, really, because it's a highly skilled game.
You mentioned working with, I think you said 7, 8, and 9, from memory. So lower order batters, when the opening batters are at start of day one and you've got maybe a pre-lunch session where they won't be involved. Do you find your coaching is very different for, I know seven's probably not a tail ender, but let's go 9, 10, 11 then. When you're coaching those batters who sometimes have massive pressure on them when they've got the bat in hand, but they're there, they're paid the money to bowl, do you find it's quite a different skill coaching tail enders? Because I'm of the belief now that there's almost a, almost, not quite, it's a bit mad this, almost a role for specialist tail ender batting coaching, because it strikes me that it's such a clear role and there's so much pressure and it's not their specialist role in the team.
Look, I mean, I think you go back over the last 5-10 years of county cricket. Let's talk county cricket, not international cricket at this stage. Even look at international cricket, actually. I mean, I think games are won down there. I genuinely do. I think the teams where 7, 8 and 9 can get hundreds, especially in England, with where the conditions are really tough up front, your first 30 overs, we know how important that is. The teams that back deep and have players who can score hundreds down there is absolutely a game changer. So there are certain levels of 10 and 11 who really struggle with the bat, but then there are a lot who do have the talent. They have the ability. And stretching that out of them is a challenge. Yeah. It is a challenge, but that's the fun bit. That's the enjoyment that you try and do. And there is a different element of it because you don't want them to be totally consumed with improving their a technical flaw. It's how they can, yes, manage that and work with that over time and maybe improve that side of things. But then actually go and be effective.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was going to go for, effective, yeah. Finding a method, finding some sort of way of, because even the guys, you mentioned 10 or 11, there are some who really struggle, but even there, you might have to bat for a couple of overs in a massive championship game and bat for a draw. It could be crucial, couldn't it? So, but you wouldn't necessarily coach them in the same way as you're going to coach your opening batters, because there's no point in trying to make them that, is there?
No, I think, the reality is, if I'm brutally honest, the biggest difference between your lower orders and your proper batters in red ball cricket is bravery.
Courage and physical courage.
I mean, people, this is where it's such a wonderful game to coach and it's such a tough game to play, because getting hit with a cricket ball at 90 mile an hour can kill you. That is a reality. So there is a fear factor there that I don't think people quite understand how to help people through that. And the reality is that a lot of your players at the lower order, that's the biggest thing that they struggle with. So it's helping them be effective. Maybe some of them stay leg side of the ball and carve away, somehow keep the half-decent ball out or totally counter-attack. Or can you find a level of bravery that allows you to be effective?
It's fascinating that, because we don't talk about it enough, do we, as coaches? You're talking because you're working at the top end of the game, so completely get that. But if I work with an under-17 batter or an under-15 batter, it's pretty obvious that that's one of the key blocks. And until they relax and back their own technique to get out of the way of the ball or to hit the ball rather than it hit them, they just can't develop their own technique, can they? They can't play off the front foot. They can't do anything until they get over that paralysis.
Well, that's it. And that's where if we had to go back to the actual skill of the game and, what technique is. I mean, technique is effectively a balance between control and power of hitting a cricket ball, and saving time. The top players, we hear the top commentators in the world say this player's got time. He makes the bowlers look slow. That effectively is what rhythm and timing and putting into a package of what technique is. And some people are better than it with others. And couple that allows you to build on the bravery aspect of it. If you can never get over that, you will always be a number 9, 10 and 11. That's a reality.
Yeah. And possibly not a very good one either, not a very effective one. Yeah. So if I'm working with an under 17 young county player who definitely shows signs of being scared of being hit by the ball, do you start with tennis balls and throw it at their heads and give them ways of evading it? Or do you let them get hit a few times and realise it's not so bad, or give them a new thigh pad? Or what do you do?
It's a great question, because I've often seen a lot of young players being ruined by good intentions, but sometimes it's ego coaching. You get a young guy on the nets there and, okay, we're going to work on the short ball, and they get absolutely bombed for 3 months.
Mm. I feel awful, by the way, because last night I was doing a session with an under-16 county player and I hit him in the ribs with the sidearm. So now I'm really worried, but go on, carry on.
But coupled on that, so I think you have to make sure that when you do those sessions, they're short. They're real intense, they're sharp, so they get the understanding of how quick and how stretching that side of things definitely is part of it. But it's got to be coupled with the actual technique of playing a ball above the waist. I see it too often that 90% of the time you do a lot of your technical grooving, bottom half, front foot stuff, yeah. but you don't do enough technical stuff above the waist. Mm. And there's no difference. A lot of strong base work where you're actually hitting balls horizontally off your throat, off your chest, off your nose, how to get out the way when it isn't a danger area, how do you get out of jail effectively, how do you manage the risk. And the more you do of that, I think it gives the guys confidence to then be able to go, okay, actually, I can do this. Mm. You know? Because I say to a lot of players, when a ball is above your waist, there's two modes of dismissals that cannot happen. You can't get bowled and you can't get LBW. So the odds are already in your favour. Now, can we work on how we can actually be effective with it? There's times when there's odd danger areas. How do we actually evade that? And then how can we actually counterbalance that and score? Mm. And I don't think we spend enough time actually hitting enough balls in that area and then stretch it with pace, yes, obviously. So the reality is there are times when you do have to have short sessions where, you know, a guy gets hit now and then. That's part and parcel of the game.
But yeah. What you're saying is arm the player with a technique that works before you throw them into that pit of potential danger.
Yes, and stretch that. Dial it up, dial it down. You've got a lovely range there to work with that you can just build that up over, this is where winter's wonderful, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 winters.
It's really interesting. That's so key to your philosophy, because I remember Graham Thorpe, who obviously we did a lot of work with at ECB, just a terrific batting coach. And he, I think, more or less was the first I heard talking about the importance of having a really sound game against short pitch bowling, because then that allows you, frees you up mentally to play off the front foot and do everything you potentially can do. But and so that was his start point. Generally, he felt that was the most important foundation block to get in place, and then that allowed the batter to flourish. But until that was there, he never felt, I think, that you could really go on as you should. I mean, he was a fine player of short pitch bowling himself, wasn't he?
But he was. I couldn't agree more. 100%. I've seen it with Ben Slater. Hass has now moved to that level. He's a really good example. He'll be the first to admit, actually, I was on that tour to Australia in 21 or 22 Ashes, where he opened the batting, and he didn't quite have the skill set to be able to hurt the opposition above the waist. He's brought that in his game, and it actually helps the rest of his game. Slater's another great example. He's worked tremendously hard over 3-4 seasons, cutting and pulling, where it's become a huge strength. But it actually helps the other side of his game as well, because it breeds the confidence. It also then, the game of cricket is competition bat free ball. You're competing with the bowler. You know, if you're lining the bowler up and he's not lining you up, it really helps things. You know, if the bowler tries to bowl a weapon and it's a short ball and it goes for 4 and it's a quality, crisp cricket shot where the bat is still in wonderful positions, it sends a huge message, you know. Whereas, you know, the caveat to that, you see a batter who's sitting off himself, he's not in a powerful position, his body's got nowhere to go except either fall over or get hit. The bowler knows he's got one on you, you know, and more often than not, you're in a weaker position to actually save the ball that's going to hit your stumps anyway. So, you know, in simple terms, that is the game.
So that transition from inside, where pitches are fast and bouncy, out to April, where it's slow, low, and very different, isn't it? Very green, and preparing batters to make that change. If you've been spending too many hours hitting balls on decks that don't do much, just fly through nicely, it's a bit of a change, isn't it?
It's a huge challenge, and it is a huge change, I think. Yeah, tongue in cheek, you know, if money was an object, it wasn't an issue, you could change the surfaces upstairs. Yeah. You know, to 3 or 4 different types of surfaces.
Do you put rubber matting down? Or
we do at times, rubber mats,
carpets,
so you try and make that right. The biggest issue with indoor centres is to replicate seam movement is the biggest thing. You know, that's one of the hardest things to play in cricket, because a ball's moving from 3 metres away, sharp, it could get anyone out in the world. That's what makes it such a beautiful game. To replicate that is not easy. However, you do have loads in your armory to improve players. So if it's just going to be blind coaching where it's repetitive, just on the surface smashing your hands through the line of the ball, you can pick up bad habits and it can be overkill. I think that's where I love to install and help players understand separating your types of practice. Is it a method session? Is it a proper technical position session where you paying real attention to what your body's doing, because once you install those positions, they will stand you in good stead no matter what the surface, what the conditions are. And then it just allows that individual to cope with the different pressures of the game and the different environments. And you can stretch that. You know, you can have loads of fun with that. So, you know, you can have nice fatigue sessions in there where you're trying to break down the technique of a player by just making their body break down. You can stretch that left and right. So there's loads you can do. I think if you only focus on the negatives of, you know, it's a long winter and it's the same surface and it can get boring. And yeah, it can, without a doubt. Hence why we've got to try and be better than that.
You must get to know the players so well, because you spend so much time with them at this time of year. Mm. And then obviously you're travelling around with them and you're there on their big days, on match days. Mm. You must know these, and that's a great part of coaching, isn't it? When you have that luxury of getting to know the player, the person so well, which can only help what you do.
I think cricket's really unique in that, because you literally are spending so much time with players. So you do, you know, you end up properly caring for them like your own kid, you know, and that's a reality. You just want them to do well. And I think any coach out there knows that. I think to get to that top end, there has to be that level of care. But there's times where it's tough love, you know, and you can stretch them and push them. But those away trips are really nice, because you're in it together, you can have a drink at the right times, you can stretch them running around, and you just create a different little bond that sometimes can separate, you know, you winning something.
Is that why you love it? It's the people and getting to know so many people so well. That probably is it, isn't it? The best part of the job?
I think so. I love the actual coaching of it, but over years of being involved in cricket and all different sports, I love my ball sports. I grew up with tennis and hockey, and so I understand how the body moves. I think it's one of my strengths as a coach, and it being a highly skilled game, I know how to implement that into the player. But that almost becomes the easy bit. I think the challenging bit at times is knowing when to challenge a player, when to, you know, when you're in a bad mood, when you've had a tough day at home or whatever, the rest of it, you know, how to hold on to yourself and
emotional control, all of that.
That I think is really gets you out of bed at times, you know.
So do you still follow the tennis? Because you look like a tennis player. Has people said that to you before? I think it's the hair.
I don't follow it as closely as I used to.
I remember, you know, 10, 15 years ago when I first met you were right into your tennis, weren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I was back in South Africa. I mean, up until 15, 16, it was most probably my main sport, top 10 in the country. So it was one of those where I loved my tennis, but I also loved my team sports much probably more.
Yeah.
I just love the team element of it.
So you never get a chance to hit a tennis ball now, presumably, other than with a cricket bat?
Not nearly as much as, now and then I do, but you know, you play a little bit of paddle now and then. But, but look, I've got a 16-year-old and an 8-year-old, and you know, one's 8-year-old's obsessed with football at the moment, and my eldest is loving his cricket. So away from coaching, I like to spend as much time as I can with them, really.
I was going to mention, actually, because just we're sitting here, but if I look to my right, I can make out Nottingham Forest ground. Because some of the guys support Nottingham Forest.
They do, yeah.
Yeah. They're having a great season, obviously.
Brilliant.
I wonder if that can rub off, whether it can be the year for Nottingham and Nottinghamshire. It's a hell of a story going on over the road.
We hope so. We hope so. I think cricket's a really tough one. There's just so many variables in a county season, you know. So
you need a bit of luck as well, don't you?
You need a bit of luck. You need,
which people never really talk about.
No. You need high quality players, which we do have. But the reality is, the Surreys at this stage have been a cut above it than most. So, but I feel like we're moving to a phase now, physically, mentally, with the quality that we've got, that we can start to push.
Yeah. Why don't top coaches talk about luck more? Because I mean, it is a big part of it. If you win the toss on the right day, or you get the rain on the right day, or or actually another team gets some rain on the right day, you know, that can make a difference.
It's massive. I think in cricket, it's one of those you don't talk about it, because it's seen as a negative thing. It's seen as
wasted energy, really, isn't it? You can't control it.
I think you're spot on that it is wasted energy, and you like to think over the course of the season, it levels itself out. The reality is sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you do go through a season where, you know, every time you're batting, the clouds have come over and it's overcast and it's really tough.
You remember Michael Caulfield, the sports psychologist, who you, I think you had a level 3 presentation with about 15 years ago, so you may not. He's now a psychologist at Brentford Football.
Right.
And he always says about luck being when opportunity meets preparation. So, you know, it's that whole, the harder I try, the luckier I got type idea, isn't it? So I suppose, and you make your own luck, all those sorts of cliches, but I think that's quite a good sum up.
I think you're spot on, because again, you know, sometimes the momentum of the game and the rest of it, knowing when it's critical moments, and if you lose those critical moments, knowing that the next morning might be a tough overcast morning, well then you've got to make sure that you don't get into that situation and you're the ones, you know, where you're on top of the game. So it's exactly that.
Good. Well, look, you better go and throw a few more balls, I think, because you've had nearly half an hour off there with a coffee, and I'm worried that you're going to stiffen up and you need to get up and throw some balls. So, yeah, look, have a great weekend. Thanks so much, Ant, for taking some time out to talk to us. And, yeah, good luck for the next few weeks into the season. I hope your preparations go well and look after that shoulder.
Tim, thank you. It's always a pleasure to see you. I know we go way back. And anytime, we can do it again. So, thank you.
Great to hear from Ant Botha. That's it for this episode of the iCoach Cricket Podcast. But for now, thanks for listening.